When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Crossover NBA podcast, first podcast in August, and we are doing it with Howard Beck back from his six-week vacation. felt that way, Beck. You were gone a long time, my friend, but you are welcome back here on the pod.
I mean, it was like a week and a half, but if it felt like 6 weeks, it just means you missed me. That's really touching. I appreciate that. It means something to me, Mannix, to be missed by you. That much, that 10 days could feel like 6 weeks. And we get to squeeze in a couple more of these before I leave again, and then you do. So
Third week in August is when I start my vacation for the off season, and I can't wait to get there, let me tell you. But fortunately, we've been lucky enough in July to have plenty to talk about. August, and we'll jump in right here, got off to a sad start. Bill Russell, the Hall of Fame center, one of the all-time greats, the winningest player in NBA history, the ultimate winner when it comes to team sports with 11 championships in his 13 NBA seasons. He passed away on Sunday at the age of 88. A lot of tributes, Howard, have come in for Bill Russell, deservedly so. And, you know, one thing I noted in my column on this on Monday was, you know, just the reverential way that so many of the all-time greats acknowledge Bill Russell, from Michael Jordan to Magic Johnson, Charles Barkley, even Barack Obama, you know, had a pretty strong statement about what Russell meant both to basketball and to the civil rights movement of the 1950s and the 1960s. He just accomplished so much in his life, and a lot of people were expressing their gratitude for it over the last couple of days. What is Bill Russell's legacy to you? Let's kind of start there, sort of big picture, when you look at the life and career of Bill Russell.
Yeah, you know, sadly, though I've covered this league for 25 years, I never met him, which...
Yeah, I haven't either, by the way. And I live in Boston, and Look, I was a ball boy for the Celtics, most people know, back in the mid-1990s. Russell wasn't really around all that much back in those days. He was kind of brought back into the NBA fold in the mid to late 1990s by David Stern, but he had well-publicized issues with the city of Boston, with the people in Boston. We'll get to that, but I never had a chance to meet him. I mean, people thought, when I heard from people over the last couple of days, be like, oh, do you have any personal memories with Bill Russell? I didn't. I never actually met the man one-on-one.
No, same. I was in this, you and I'm sure had the same experience where occasionally you're in the same room. He's there for some presentation, some award, or he's there with Adam Silver. He's there with other dignitaries. And, you know, there's this regalness to Bill Russell. We talk about people with gravitas, like the guy just oozed gravitas. There was an aura about him. And so part of not meeting him is that, okay, I was in the same room, but whereas with other all-time greats, you might amble up at some point and say, hi, hey, you know, I'm Howard Beck from Sports Illustrated, from the New York Times, you know, years ago, or whatever. There are times where you use the opportunity and your platform and your employer's name to go make an introduction of yourself. it's not, I don't want to say that he was intimidating because there was like, he was, you know, struck some kind of fear into you. It wasn't like that kind of intimidation. There are certain figures who, because of their stature and their aura, are intimidating because they're just that important, that regal. And in his case, it was one where like, I don't want to bother the man. I unless I had a specific reason or needed to ask him something or had something prearranged, he's not the kind of figure I would have just walked up to, because he just occupied this other echelon. This is the only way I can put it. And just immense respect for the man, for what he did, especially, of course, off the court as well as on the court, what he stood for, what he meant to the game, what he meant to the history of the game, what he means to today's players. On some level, I'm sorry I never got a chance to meet him. On the other hand, like, it's fine. Like, he did more than enough for the game, and for all of us who cover the game, who make a living in or near or adjacent to this game. So you ask what, like, about his legacy, and none of this is going to be, you know, terribly original. I mean, thousands and thousands of words have been spilled the last couple of days on this, but he set the bar for winning, period, in any sport, but especially the NBA with 11 championships and the 8 in a row. He set the bar for sacrificing personal glory for team success. His numbers, people often note, especially the scoring numbers, are modest. They could have been much more. He knew what it would take to elevate his team. So he set the bar for winning, for sacrificing for team success. He set the bar for activism and for using his platform as a great athlete. And he did it at a time when the risks and the consequences were far, far greater. You know, I think rightfully praise Colin Kaepernick and LeBron James and others who have stepped to the fore in recent years in a variety of ways. Kaepernick, obviously, to at great risk and to great consequences. LeBron, different context. But, you know, without Bill Russell, and obviously that generation, Muhammad Ali, Jim Brown, and others, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, without them, I don't know that we have the athlete activism of today. So he set the bar there. And he is, as I think a lot of people have said in the last few days, and I don't know how you could make a strong case against this premise, he might be the single most important player, most important figure in NBA history when you bring everything into account. And part of that's the era that he played in and thrived in, at a time when the league is still in its relative infancy. But because he set the bar in all these different ways that I just mentioned, and because of that, we understand the league and what it means to be great in this league, what it means to step outside of your bounds as an athlete in this league. All of that is because of the standards that Bill Russell set. So calling him the most important figure in NBA history, I don't think is that big of a stretch. I am not one who thinks, generally speaking, that you retire a number league-wide. I always thought that seemed like a little too grandiose, but I think you wrote it this week, and fairly convincingly. I think if ever there was one player to do it for, people talked about it with Jordan at one point, and it seemed a little bit ludicrous, but Bill Russell, it would be justified. I don't know if this is something the league has seriously considered or will, but I can't think of a better way to honor all that Bill Russell stood for in this game than to retire his number league-wide.
I agree, and that was what I wrote on Monday. Look, Major League Baseball retired Jackie Robinson's number in 1997, 25 years after he passed away. So it's not like you have to do it when the person is still alive, though, as I look back, I kind of wish we had this discussion more while Bill Russell was still alive. But baseball didn't retire Jackie Robinson's number because he was a great infielder. They didn't retire his number because of anything he did on the field production-wise. It was all what he did off the field and what he accomplished breaking Major League Baseball's color barrier. Everything he went through, which has been well chronicled in books and movies at this point, that was why baseball retired Jackie Robinson's number. Now, Bill Russell did not break basketball's color barrier, the NBA's color barrier. That happened a few years before he came into the NBA, but he was the first black head coach in the four major sports, and he was this transformative figure off the court. I agree with you. The idea of retiring Michael Jordan's number was, it never really made a lot of sense to me either, because you'd be retiring it because Jordan was a great basketball player, maybe the greatest basketball player of all time. You'd retire Bill Russell's number league-wide because of what he accomplished on and off the floor, the unprecedented nature of what he accomplished on and off the floor. And I think the NBA should give it serious consideration. I kind of closed my column with this note I picked up in my research on Bill Russell, where, you know, when Jackie Robinson died in 1972, his wife, Rachel, called Bill Russell and said, "Bill, we want you to be a pallbearer at Jackie's funeral." And Bill Russell, of course, said, "Yes, absolutely." But he asked why. And Rachel Robinson said, "You, Bill Russell, were Jackie's favorite athlete." Like, if you're Jackie Robinson's favorite athlete, and those reasons go beyond basketball too, you deserve serious consideration for this kind of distinction. So I hope the NBA, Adam Silver, league owners consider it, and that number six, which happens to be LeBron's number, like, and that number six is immortalized forever and never worn in the NBA ever again, because you'd be doing it for a lot of the same reasons that baseball justifiably retired Jackie Robinson's number. I went back and watched that ceremony back in 1997, and Bud Selig said at the time, you know, no player is bigger than the game except Jackie Robinson. And Bill Russell kind of fits that criteria. He is bigger than the game. He was bigger than the game, and the NBA, I think, should treat him accordingly. All right, we do have a handful of basketball topics to get into. We're not going to do Kevin Durant today because, as far as I know, and I've tried to stay as on top of this as I can, there's no real movement there. So we'll punt on that topic for the day. But we do have a interesting date coming up in Lakerland. August 4th, LeBron James is eligible to sign a 2-year extension with the Lakers. Now, no one expects him to do it on Thursday, and he doesn't have to do it on Thursday. In fact, he doesn't have to do it until like next June 30th. Like, he has a whole year to basically decide to sign a multi-year contract extension. Nobody's expecting him to do it now with the Lakers in such a state of flux where we really don't know who's going to be on that roster come training camp. Russell Westbrook just hired a new agent, Jeff Schwartz. We'll see how that impacts things in Westbrook's world, but there's still a lot of uncertainty within the Lakers. But Howard, if we do get to training camp and LeBron does not have an extension, this is going to be something that's a distraction. It just is. You and I both covered LeBron in 2010 and LeBron in 2014 and LeBron in 2018, though to a lesser degree on that one. It was talked about everywhere LeBron went. So it's the kind of thing that can have a negative impact on the Lakers if he doesn't sign that extension. I mean, do you agree with that? Like, what's your kind of take on the LeBron extension day, what he does, and how that affects the Lakers season?
I think just based on, if nothing else, the stage of his career and his age and all the context that led to him going to the Lakers, this is not the same as his waning days with Miami or with Cleveland the second time through, or even Cleveland the first time. This is not LeBron in his prime who, like, first of all, I should just note real quick, LeBron at his best right now when he's healthy is still an MVP caliber player. So it's not that he wouldn't be chased after by every team in the league. It's not that he's not still vital or, you know, a franchise changer. He is. But he's turning 38 in December. He has a real difficulty staying healthy ever since going to LA. The point is that I think the odds that he would relocate again at this stage of his career are fairly low. This isn't the threat that it was in 2010 or 2014 or 2018. It's not the same specter looming over a franchise, even though obviously it would be, I think, humiliating for the Lakers to have him walk away if he still got good to great years left in him. So it's not a non-story. It's just not the story that it was in previous incarnations when he was in the final year of a deal. Also, there's really no reason for him to sign an extension. For what? He doesn't need it for financial security, clearly. I just don't see any advantage to it. And to the extent that he always wields some leverage, and he can't even while under contract, but hey, why not use it now? Why not hold that out and just say, listen, guys, been a rough go here lately. I'm going to play wait and see. Even if he has no intention of leaving, playing the wait and see game, keeping the pressure on the front office is the right thing. If nothing else, maybe you keep enough pressure on them that they don't make another stupid move like they did in letting Alex Caruso walk over luxury tax concerns. Don't let them go cheap again. So, and if nothing else, LeBron not signing the extension will give all of the debate shows and Twitter 6 months of floating silly trade rumors of things that could happen between now and the trade deadline in February, as if LeBron would actually be traded in the final year of his deal, which I don't think would happen. Then we can spend another several months speculating on where he'll sign in the offseason if things don't go right. You know, he should do it for the media ecosphere, if nothing else, just to give everybody more to talk about, because eventually we'll find out the fates of Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook and Kyrie Irving and Donovan Mitchell. And when those things are over, we need something. So why not? LeBron, don't sign the extension. Everybody needs fodder for the next 6 months.
Yeah, I agree with most of what you said there. It's certainly not as big a feeding frenzy as it was in 2010. It's not as big as what it was in 2014. But that's not to say, Howard, it's not going to still be big. I think it is going to still be big, especially if the Lakers get off to a sluggish start, because then you will start hearing daily about where LeBron might be traded. Should the Lakers trade LeBron? Would LeBron show up to Team X if he was traded for the first time in his career? And that, we've seen, can have a negative impact on your roster, because then
sure,
all these stories come out. LeBron doesn't want to play with this guy, doesn't want to play with that guy. It's happened before in LeBron's career. It has happened over and over again at times at different stops. So, look, I'm kind of with you. Like, he probably shouldn't sign an extension, because it does make the Lakers spend money. You know, if they know they don't have LeBron under contract next year, it makes the Lakers spend money. But it's a risk, man. If Anthony Davis winds up turning an ankle and is out for 6 weeks, and Russell Westbrook's still there and not playing at a high level, and the Lakers are like 13-15 through 28 games or something like that, this is going to take on a life of its own. It really is. It really is kind of a rock and a hard place for the Lakers in this situation, because I don't know. I feel this could be bad, Howard, if they get off to a rocky start. I really do.
I mean, look, that part of it is certainly true, and I'm not downplaying that aspect of it. I don't think it's as big of a deal, as I said, as it was in previous stops and at previous earlier stages of his career. But the potential for it to be a distraction is certainly there. And because it's LeBron, anything LeBron does, anything LeBron doesn't do is automatically a big story anyway. So for sure, it has that potential. But LeBron also knows how to navigate this. The Lakers have navigated similar situations too. If they go into the season with LeBron with no extension, LeBron will, you know, he'll give whatever pat answer about, you know, listen, at this stage of my career, it makes more sense to wait. And look, I have ultimate confidence in this team, blah, 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 blah. Flash forward a couple of more months. Let's say they are, you know, 10-16 or something. And everyone's speculating about, can you guys turn this around? It's not working. You know, maybe Westbrook is still there and he's still, you know, just kind of wandering around aimlessly, not helping matters. And the questions will start to become, LeBron, does this impact how you see your future with the Lakers? You're not under contract beyond the season. You know, it'll come up a couple times. He'll bat it away and then it'll die down again. I mean, it doesn't take much today. Like, it's funny how often we in the media talk about the distraction of essentially ourselves asking questions about a guy's future, when in fact we do it a lot less, frankly, than we did 10, 20 years ago. As soon as somebody shuts it down and it becomes clear they're not going to entertain it and they've got their pat answers ready, we kind of all stand down and say, well, you know what? it's not worth throwing this out there in the middle of this post-game scrum or this practice day because we've already heard it. He's just going to give me an annoyed repetition of what he already said. So we're not even as big of a distraction as we make ourselves out to be. We give ourselves way too much credit in this regard. But the distraction, the quote-unquote distraction, is us. And now, the questions will go away. That'll happen.
One thing, Howard, he doesn't always bat them away, though.
True. fair point.
He doesn't always do that.
he sometimes does the kind of passive-aggressive thing where he lets just enough linger or gives a kind of cryptic response or tweets something. Okay, fair. He will do just enough to probably, again, to keep the pressure on the Lakers and to feed the debate shows, frankly. Because that's where the distraction won't be us asking questions. Because, like I say, it won't come up that often. It's not an everyday thing. We pretend it is. It's not. But what is an everyday thing is the 24-hour debate shows and talk shows and podcasts like this one, then using the ambiguity or whatever cryptic response he just gave to keep talking about it. Is that discussion, that noise, is that the distraction? Yes. Much more so than a beat writer from, you know, Milwaukee saying, hey, LeBron, you're a free agent at the end of the season. You want to come play, you know, your final years of your career with Giannis for the veterans minimum? It's not going to be that. It'll be all the chatter. And I don't think he wants that. I don't think the Lakers want that. But LeBron has channeled that to his advantage or to his to good effect in terms of leverage before. He could again. So, yeah, I do think you're right in that if we go into the season with no LeBron extension, it will be one of our ongoing storylines. You and I will be on this podcast discussing it in mid-December and again in January and, you know, all the way through to the end. We can't help ourselves.
We really can't. But again, sometimes LeBron feeds it a little bit, gives it enough oxygen. It's like that, I don't know why I'm thinking about this right now, but it's like that little Shop of Horrors, a little bit of blood in there, a little feed the beast a little bit. And the beast wakes up and gives it enough to talk about in that context. You didn't see Little Shop of Horrors? We don't get the reference.
Never did. I am aware of it.
Wow. Okay. How do you not see that? You got kids, Soward. I mean, how do you?
I have one kid, but no, I have not seen it. I'm not sure she has either. I'll have to ask my wife if she has.
A little vacation watching then.
We should put it on the list.
That's what I'm saying. Rick Moranis, great show, great movie. All right, a couple of things I want to hit on. The NBA has opened tampering charges into two of its teams. The New York Knicks, with respect to how they conducted business with the Jalen Brunson signing, and the Philadelphia 76ers, with everything that went into what was happening with James Harden, his reduced contract, the signing of Daniel House, the signing of PJ Tucker, a lot of stuff there. Now, this only happens, as far as I know, if teams complain about something like this. I heard Bobby Marks over on ESPN talk about how when the Nets, when he was working for them, signed Andre Kirilenko, there were complaints from multiple teams about, well, was there a backdoor deal between Kirilenko and the Russian owner, Prokhorov? Was he being paid with a bag of rubles at the end of the day? Like, there was a lot of complaints then. I'm assuming the same is true now, that there was one or more complaints from teams about the Knicks. Maybe the Mavericks complained. The 76ers, I can tell you there were, I talked to enough executives that were bellyaching about what was going on in Philadelphia. But here we are with two tampering complaints. Now, tampering complaints are not new in the NBA. There was the issue last year with the Heat signing of Kyle Lowry. Sacramento had an issue a couple of years ago involving Bogdan Bogdanovic. Sorry, I got the other one. There have been investigations before. None have yielded what I would say significant penalties, backbreaking penalties. But Howard, I bring this up because it's happening in the backdrop of the NFL coming down pretty hard on the Miami Dolphins for tampering. The Miami Dolphins were just docked two draft picks, including a first-round draft pick next year, for tampering with Tom Brady. Now, that happened on multiple occasions. It happened over a multi-year period, so it's a little bit more extensive. But you know, I wonder if the NBA is looking to make an example out of somebody, because we know the NBA is not thrilled with all these kind of 6:01 p.m. signings and, you know, all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes. But as you look at these two situations, what do you think? The Knicks, who went out and hired Jalen Brunson's father to be an assistant coach on the team. Brunson, of course, represented by the son of Knicks president Leon Rose and the Sixers. James Harden takes a big pay cut. I think one of the running jokes I heard from executives was, how much is he going to get in Fanatics stock? Because one of the now former Sixers owners is a top executive with Fanatics. Like, what do you make of these two tampering charges?
Let me start with this. I am on record, probably on this podcast and certainly on my previous podcast, as saying that we've reached a point where the NBA should hold a public ceremony, maybe on national TV, make it like the lottery show, a lot of buildup and everything, at the crescendo of which they will ceremoniously rip out all the pages pertaining to tampering in the league bylaws and burn them. Because it's pointless. I mean, tampering is rampant in this league, has been for some time. The league rolled out a bunch of new regulations and stern warnings and penalties and threats, and we'll take your cell phones and your texts and we'll all that a few years ago. Has it changed anything? No. In my view, tampering is so rampant and so commonplace in this league that it's almost pointless to try to police it. But that said, we're dealing with the reality that my fantasy of a ceremonial burning of the tampering rules is never going to happen. It is on the books. And if it's on the books, then enforce your damn rules, right? So this is where I am on it. I'm not morally outraged by tampering, but I am annoyed that the league will try to have it both ways, in both allowing tampering to happen constantly and then, you know, kind of almost, I don't want to say cherry picking when to involve themselves. There is some rhyme and reason to it, but it just seems a little pointless. Like, this is the fingers in a dike thing where, you know, there's just holes springing everywhere and you're not actually solving the issue. Also, by the way, a year ago, when we had Lonzo Ball in the sign and trade and what was the other one? Kyle Lowry in sign and trade. Like, what was lost by those teams? Like second round picks?
Yeah.
One each or something? If you're going to threaten and rewrite rules and make a big to-do out of a tampering crackdown, and then the penalty is the loss of a second round pick, something so benign that any team will gladly risk getting the player they wanted if all of it costs them. I mean, you would have gladly traded a second round pick for Kyle Lowry or for Lonzo Ball. It's not, the penalties aren't dissuading anybody from doing anything. So the league is still trying to have it both ways. Adam Silver in general, I think it's well established fact, Adam Silver in general is not as much of a disciplinarian as David Stern was. Not with team owners, not with players, not with front offices and tampering, not with anything. That's fine. But you can't stomp and threaten and all this stuff and then have these really barely impactful penalties. But whatever. All right, so the Knicks and the Sixers. The reason that they're getting investigated right now and all the other deals that were reported within seconds after free agency opened, clearly implying that all those deals were consummated long before, is because it's a matter of degree. They investigate when it's blatant. They also, as you put it out, and as Bobby Marks pointed out, they investigate when a team files an actual complaint. If a team doesn't file a complaint and the league wants to initiate it on its own, they can, but they do it when it's blatant. The Knicks sending Worldwide West and Allen Houston and Julius Randle to a Mavericks game, should say Mavericks Jazz game, because Donovan Mitchell and Jalen Brunson were both involved, and Donovan Mitchell may yet become a Knick too. But the key one is Brunson, because he was the free agent. Sending them to a Mavericks game, sitting in the front row, hiring Rick Brunson as an assistant coach. Rick Brunson had not been an NBA assistant for 4 years. He'd been out of the league. I understand he's a Tibbs guy. I understand they have a long-standing relationship. But you hired him literally weeks before free agency opened and everybody knew who your top target was. When it becomes blatant, when it becomes kind of stupid, like we're just out there in the open doing this, now you're making the league look silly if they don't investigate. And this is still like you know, this is garden variety stuff. It's no big, like being, sending, you know, team officials to a game. I mean, Lawrence Frank was chasing Kawhi Leonard all over.
That's what I was going to bring up too.
He was at every
Raptor game, home
team,
game.
Team president of the Clippers, following Kawhi Leonard, like he was like following him to Whole Foods. Like he was everywhere Kawhi Leonard showed up for a year. Lawrence Frank was there to say hello, shake hands, wish him a happy birthday, give him Valentine's chocolates. I don't know, whatever else. And the Clippers, lo and behold, got Kawhi Leonard at the end of that season. So that, you know, it can be more flagrant, more blatant. And this is also for Jalen Brunson, which cuts both ways. On the one hand, is it really worth the league's time? On the other hand, was it really worth the Knicks risking all this to get Jalen Brunson, who may be displaced as their, you know, key player of the offseason, key acquisition, if they get Donovan Mitchell anyway? Like, all of this is kind of silly, but you invite this when you do it the way they did. They could have done this much differently. They didn't have to hire Rick Brunson. There's all the other ties, too. You mentioned Leon Rose, the team president of the Knicks. His son, Sam, is the representative for CAA, Leon's former agency. His son, Sam, is now representing Jalen Brunson. There's a lot of ties here. But unless the league is going to, and by the way, I think it frankly should, but it never will, unless the league is going to actually create some ethics policies where agencies can't represent both coaches and players and GMs, which is certainly an issue in this league, unless you're going to start legislating things like we have in Congress where, you know, you're not supposed to have the revolving door where you leave Congress and the next day go work for a lobbying firm, unless you're going to start doing stuff like that to keep agents and their former clients and their front offices from all being entangled, unless you're going to have rules about, you know, kind of an anti-nepotism practice where, you know, maybe Leon Rose's son shouldn't be representing players who are negotiating with the Knicks. I don't know. Unless you're going to try to create a whole new raft of rules to create some sort of higher ethics in the NBA, then this stuff's just going to happen. You can't keep Leon Rose's son from being an agent who represents a player that the Knicks want. You can't keep the Knicks from hiring Rick Brunson months before you sign his son. And you can't keep Rick Brunson and Jalen Brunson from talking, I won't say at the dinner table, they're adults. They're probably not at the same dinner table that often. But you can't keep father and son from talking about his career. So, but it's the blatant way the Knicks went about this, I think, that triggers the investigation. I don't know where this leads, but yeah. It's silly.
Yeah. I don't think much is going to come from this Knicks investigation, because while it was goofy for them to send Worldwide West, Allen Houston, others to a game, you know, there's no rule against hiring a father, and there's no rule against Leon Rose talking to his son. And how are you even going to tell what they've been talking about? I mean, it's just, and besides that, the biggest reason the Knicks got Jalen Brunson is they paid him the most. Like, they gave him $100 million over four years. Like,
the Mavericks would come back and say, we never got our chance to counter-propose. He never gave us a meeting.
You know, but
He did make up his mind without fully. Let's back up for a second, Chris, and sorry to interrupt. Let's back up for a second to the point of anti-tampering rules in the first place. The idea is everyone has a shot at the same time. You become a free agent at 6 p.m. on June 30th. Used to be midnight, July 1st, blah, blah, blah. All right. June 30th, 6 p.m. Eastern. You become a free agent. All 30 teams have an equal chance to woo you at that point. If you have made up your mind before then, because some team already illegally negotiated a contract with you, that's the point. It has prevented everyone else from having a fair shot. And so the Mavericks would say, we didn't have a fair shot, even though he was their guy, and they had plenty of time to talk to him, and they had extension talks that went nowhere. The response would generally be, yeah, but the Mavericks didn't have a chance to counter-propose. He had made up his mind because the Knicks had already made this offer before they were legally allowed to. That's how it would be presented.
Yeah, I get that. Though, you know, look, Mavericks can argue whatever they want. I had been told going into that there was a ceiling for what they were going to offer Jalen Brunson. They believed they could replace him with a smaller free agent plus a returning Tim Hardaway. I don't think they believed he was worth 25.
And they have Dinwiddie now.
They have Dinwiddie in the mix. So that, to me, that's a tough one to prove. The Knicks and
it is. It's a tough one to prove. And also, by the way, the Mavericks, it's hard to have sympathy when they had their chances to lock him up long before.
At half the cost, the lifetime deal. The more prickly one is the Sixers and James Harden. There's nobody I've talked to that believes James Harden took a, $16 million pay cut out of the goodness of his heart. Like, nobody believes that. That stuff that's being written, James Harden focused on a championship, wants to win. James Harden, throughout the course of his career, going back to his first opportunity to get a big contract in Oklahoma City, has gone for the max. He's gone for big dollars. So now, in what will be, or could be, the last big contract of his career, he's going to leave $16 million on the table without some kind of assurances that he's going to make that back. I just have a hard time believing that. A lot of people I know across the NBA have a hard time believing that. And that's at the root of what the NBA is trying to get at here. Both, does James Harden have a handshake agreement with the 76ers about a long-term contract next summer that will make up the money he lost on the back end? Or, in a more nefarious theory, you know, Michael Rubin, who is backed out of ownership in Philadelphia. He's a top exec, or is that, he owns Fanatics. He's got a big stake.
Founder, I believe.
Founder of Fanatics, right? Like, does he find a way to make it worth James Harden's while on the back end? And that, to me, Howard, is the most dangerous part of all this. You cannot, and we don't know this to be true, just to be clear on this. This is just what's kind of like swirling as the league starts to investigate. You cannot allow, like, apparel companies that may want a player in City X, or may have a connection, in the case of Michael Rubin, in City X, to cheat the salary cap, to illegally operate outside the confines of the salary cap. I'm much more curious to see how the Harden negotiations play out than I am, or the Harden investigation, I should say, play out, than I am with the Knicks. Because that to me has a lot more potential landmines in it. Because you're gonna, like, the NBA is looking at cell phone records, text messages. They're looking at all sorts of electronic devices. Like, are they going to come up with anything that suggests that James Harden has a way, through conversation with the Sixers, of making that money back? Because if he wants to take less money, nobody can tell him otherwise. Players can do that. It's his money. It's his life. If he believes he's fine making $32 million or whatever it is, and most of us would be, and leaving $47 million, or for the $14 million gap on the table, $15 million. All right, that's his choice. Absolutely, he can do that. But if there's something fishy going on around here in that deal, I'm very curious to see how seriously the NBA takes it.
So there's actually two potential violations there, right? One is tampering, because if you were able to set up having Harden take a pay cut in his new contract, because now you have to, he opted out, right? So there's a bunch of steps there. Opt out, become a free agent, negotiate a new deal that's lower than what he was eligible for. So you have to have set all that up in advance so that you could then know you had that you would have the cap room available to go out, or the exceptions available, the flexibility available, I should say, just put it that way, to get PJ Tucker, Daniel House, whoever else, right? So that's the tampering part, is arranging things before July 1st. To set all this up. To your other, not your theory, but the league theory, the suspicion that perhaps there is either a side deal with Michael Rubin, former owner, with his Fanatics money, or one of his other companies, or that there is a wink-wink deal for Harden to opt out again next summer and sign like a four-year max deal. That's just a straight-up cap violation. If you get any outside financial compensation as part of a contract that you would go beyond the cap or beyond what you signed for under NBA rules, oh, don't worry about it. We've got this car dealership that's going to provide you XYZ. That's a cap violation. Oh, don't worry about your pay cut. We're going to make it up for you in the next contract. That's a cap violation. People can go Google Joe Smith and the Timberwolves, and you'll see what happened under the David Stern administration to the Timberwolves. He basically kneecapped them for an illegal wink-wink deal. So in the Sixers case, I would guess there's possibly two investigations, really, one for tampering and one for potential cap violations. And all of this is kind of interwoven with each other. But, you know, again, it's order of events. At what point did the Sixers come to terms with PJ Tucker? At what point did they come to terms with Harden on a pay cut that allowed the PJ Tucker signing to be possible? Like, it's order of events, and it's proving all that. You know, again,
but what's the punishment?
Yeah.
Like, you mentioned Joe Smith. Like, they voided Joe Smith's contract, right? Like, if I recall correctly, and docked Minnesota draft picks. So, like,
and banned Glenn Taylor, the owner, I think, from coming to games for like a year.
Well, look, and Stephen Ross with the Dolphins brought them up earlier. He's been banned till October 17th from Dolphins games, from league activities, etc. My question is, like, if the NBA finds evidence of tampering or evidence of a handshake deal, would they take the nuclear step of voiding the James Harden deal and voiding some of these contracts? This is what, and look, this might be a long shot for the league to prove stuff like this, but if I'm Philadelphia, that's what worried me the most. Not the loss of a draft pick or whatever, but to see the team that I built that theoretically should contend in the Eastern Conference could suddenly find itself dismantled and Harden potentially going elsewhere. Like, that to me was the bigger concern.
Yeah. I hard to know where this leads because Adam
hard to know. You're
Silver,
right.
Yeah, Adam Silver has handled these things a little differently than David Stern did. But the other thing is, then, like, say the Joe Smith one, which is, you know, one of the more famous / infamous moments in David Stern's career in terms of his disciplinarian streak. There was a paper trail. Like, they signed these contracts, or there was stuff on paper,
right? There was, like, in a drawer somewhere. There was the Joe Smith contract.
I mean, and so, you know, if you provide that much of a paper trail, no team would do that today. It's going to happen. And again, that only happened too because of a whole mess where Andy Miller was the agent representing Joe Smith, and or he was working for a different agency at the time. With Eric Fleischer at the lead there. He leaves the firm. There's a lawsuit that ensues. And so details of this stuff come out in discovery. So there's a whole bunch of shit had to happen for the Joe Smith Timberwolves situation to unfold. This is kind of the league's philosophy too. And especially, I think in recent years under Adam Silver, we can't prove all this stuff is happening. Yes, we suspect it's all happening the way you all do, but you have to be able to prove stuff. And if you can prove it, then you go to town on these teams. And if you can't prove it, it's a little hard to discipline them. There was proof in this case. And so, yes, David Stern fined a team $3.5 million. Voided the three short-term contracts that were supposed to lock Joe Smith in for 3 1-year terms to get his bird rights. Barred Glenn Taylor from having a role in operations for, I think it was a year. Kevin McHale, who was GM at the time, had to take an unpaid leave of absence. stripped them of draft picks in 2001, 2, 3, 4, and 5, although two of those picks were ultimately returned.
That was... They went to town on Minnesota there.
Fun stuff.
Yeah. I agree. David Stern operated with a different mindset than Adam Silver did when it comes to stuff like this. But, you know, you mentioned a paper trail. There was a literal paper trail back then. It could be a digital paper trail now.
Sure.
You know, you never know what could happen there. But that's something to watch over the next few weeks. Howard, we've got a few more weeks together before we disappear into the sunset for another couple of weeks. But good to catch up with you again, my friend.
You as well, my friend. We will do this, I think, at least once more before we both disappear. Maybe twice.
Maybe twice, yeah.
Yeah, maybe by then somebody will have been traded or waived and stretched.
Kevin Durant, gets traded when we're on vacation. That's always when it happens.
Well, between Durant, Kyrie, Donovan Mitchell, Westbrook, the player to be named traded behind curtain number 3 later, something's going to happen. And if it happens while I'm in another hemisphere... that's fine. I'll deal.
Pop on. See you next week, Howard.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
When you need need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.